Oh, okay, it's working.
Brief editor's note before we begin, we have a we have a YouTube channel. It's down in the description, link's down in the description. It's totally sick. It's pretty small right now, but we're going to have clips, scripted videos, 1,000 subs, oh, not 1,000, 50,000. If we get to 50,000, I'll force Jonathan and me to do the BFF dance, as will be explained later in the podcast. 100,000, we force Jonathan to watch anime, which will be the dream, man. So go ahead and go down there, smack that subscribe button. Hit that subscribe button and smack that like button. Yeah, okay. No. Back to the podcast.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Narrative Calculus, the podcast show where we analyze everything from movies to TV shows, books, musicals, and everything in between. I'm Jonathan, a filmmaker, and this is...
Titus, and I'm dead. After watching this movie,
yes.
My brain has been removed from my skull.
And today, that movie is from the studio that brought you such timeless classics such as Frozen in Love, Stop the Wedding, and I'm in Love with a Church Girl. What are these movies? And Love Finds You in Sugar Creek, and Love Finds You in Valentine? Oh no,
The Unholy Trinity!
No! Oh, man. Okay, well, let's get this one out of the way. So, in case you haven't seen this before, and if you have, we're happy for you. Please don't try it. It's basically about a girl trying to find herself and who she's meant to be in a new environment, because that solves everything. And it comes into the affection of two men, one representing her normal Amish life, and one representing everything outside of the world she's known for all her life. And it's about her having to come to a decision.
No, it isn't. It isn't about those things at all.
An independent woman.
It isn't about those things. The guy doesn't even appear until like an hour through the movie.
Yeah. It's bad, in case you couldn't tell. We're not a fan.
It's already starting to leak out. This should be like a gradual... This should be like a gradual thing where we slowly start to see the absurdity, but we can't even take it. It's just so awful. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You know, I have a good quote for this. When you get hit by a train, it's not the caboose that kills you.
It took a while to sink in there.
Okay. Okay, so you want to just start with the characters then?
All right, so here we go, characters.
Okay, let's start out with Emma, everyone's favorite Amish girl.
Cheesemaker, our favorite cheesemaker.
Yeah, yep. So she's about flatter than cardboard. We know virtually nothing about her other than she's quote-unquote different from everyone else, and that's okay. We get no other characterization other than her role in the plot as the outsider girl who feels out of place.
No. And dude, you're missing an essential part of her characterization.
Oh, wait, what is it?
The cheese, man! The cheese!
Oh, yes. Also, she is, like, the ultimate master at making cheese. She makes it better than the French and the Italians and everyone else. So, apparently, that's what that guy was talking about. Andy, by the way, he's a really big simp. But whatever, we're not going to talk about him yet. We're talking about Emma. So...
They can't go.
Other than that, what else?
It cannot be. Yeah? It cannot be understated just how ridiculous the cheese thing is. So,
yes,
I mean, it starts out
bad.
Reasonable enough. You know, they mention it that she's a pretty darn good cheesemaker. Fair enough. You know, I've seen weirder plot developments. But, like, over time, it just starts to get progressively more ridiculous. So it starts out with, dang, Emma, you make some real good cheese. And then it turns into, Emma, the people, they can't get enough of your cheese. Then it turns into, dang, this cheese is good enough to get you in a... I'm a professional cheese critic, and your cheese is so amazing.
The entire plot of this movie revolves around her being good at making cheese.
If
she didn't have that one skill, this whole movie would fall to shambles. There'd be nothing left. That's basically all you need to know about her. She's good at making cheese.
She is a master cheesemaker.
Yeah. She's also, she's super annoying. Like, and with, oh, this is, like, so feminist. Like, all those times she's like, I'm fine, and, like, I don't need any help, and I'm independent. I know it's kind of a little thing, but those parts annoyed me so much. Like, I don't know, the actress who was doing that, I don't know if it was just her performance or the script. By the way, the script, to quote one of my favorite comics, appears to have been written by a drunken rodeo clown. That's about how bad this is. There's virtually no redeemable qualities in it, but that's okay.
Part of it is the insane repetition. Like, they cannot go more than about 5 minutes them repeating the same line verbatim. Like,
yes,
you know,
that is,
I'm helping mm-hmm. my cousin at her farm. I'm helping my cousin at her farm. I am helping my cousin at yes. her farm. Did you know that I was helping my cousin at her farm?
Yes. Okay. One more thing to add about the script, though, because they knew it. The filmmakers knew it, and they included it, because if you look at one, so if you look at Emma, she makes fun of this guy. What was the guy at the beginning with the brown hair?
Jacob.
What was his name? Jacob. Yeah, Jacob. She makes fun of him by saying, the only thing he says is, "How are you?" "I'm well." "Wonderful."
Yeah, that
lovely weather we're having.
She makes
yes,
fun
it's
of
quite
it.
Quite lovely.
She makes fun of it, but her
but
entire.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. It's okay, yeah. So I guess let's just finish
well,
Emma.
Well, let me before we. Well, I just wanted to comment.
Yeah.
Earlier, you were talking about kind of like the constant independent stuff. I personally, mm-hmm. I think the problem that you had was it was mostly the repetition without lack of development, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Like she says it a lot. A lot, like, throughout the entire movie. And she implies it a ton. But she doesn't really do anything, and it doesn't advance her character. It's just generically, her-da-der, I want it. Oh, yeah, that's one of my notes here. She just keeps on saying she wants to do things, and that's the entire, and that's, like, 90% of
the
plot of the movie.
Yes.
I want to do X, Y, Z. I want to get out in the, well, do it! Just do it! Do something!
That was one of the things I had to The whole movie, and not just, like, that part, like, the entire internal plot and the external plot is all talk. They don't show anything. There's no subtlety at all. It's just characters explicitly stating information the audience needs to know or what they're feeling.
And they have to do it.
There's no subtlety at all.
And over and over and over and just...
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, so, another thing I did not like about her was this one line she had where... where Noah says, "Don't you have someone waiting for you back in Shipshinui?" What was the word? Where did she live?
I can't even remember.
I don't know. It was like Ship something Shinui. I don't know. He says, "Don't you have someone waiting for you there?" And she says, "I do what I choose." Let that sink in.
And it's just and it's so strange.
I do what I choose. It's kind of, it's not explicitly stated, but it's kind of implied that they're, like, going steady or engaged or something like that, right? There's definitely, like, some sort of relationship
right,
there.
Right.
And she's just like, "I do what I choose." Like who says that when they're in a relationship? Because that's the fastest way to get yourself kicked out of one.
And another thing, this is... If we're going to be talking about individual lines, like, there's that one part mm-hmm. where she's, like, all cool and stuff because she's reading Pride and Prejudice, right? You know what the mm-hmm. message of Pride and Prejudice is? Not to go out
no,
and be
it?
Crazy. That you should stick to your traditions and be conservative. It's not the main theme, but it's one of the underlying
themes.
Like,
And she's hiding it and not letting other people know that she's reading it, like she's rebelling somehow.
It makes no sense. It's completely contrary to the men. What?
Yep.
Oh, God.
Okay. That makes that even worse now. Okay. Oh, man. Another thing is, like, the last thing I'll say about her character was I think it would make things a lot more meaningful, because another problem I had with her was that we're not shown why she's, like, so attached to the Amish besides them being her family.
Oh, yes, yes, that's another
you
thing.
You know what I mean?
It makes it when...
It's like, why do you... What's stopping you, like, besides your family? Like,
and the ending
like,
comes
well,
off
like,
as
show
just...
Show us what's holding her, then.
The ending comes off as so unbelievably insincere when she chooses to go back to them, because it's like, you're not picking... you're not picking that option because you want to pick that option. You're picking that option because the other option is just awful. So, like, at the end, like, the second option, you know, the one who offers her a get out of Amish free card, basically, right? I'll take you with me and we'll go see Rome and all this cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. He does some nasty stuff to her on the top of a car or something, and she runs away, and that's why she chooses to stay in the Amish. Because there was one dude who was
that
an
was
awful
one
human.
Thing. That was one thing I said. I said her internal conflict would have been a lot more meaningful if it was like a neutral playing field. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, not have one be a terrible person,
point,
the other one be like super great.
At that point, it's not even a conflict. It's just like a... What's even the point of having the alternative if you're just gonna smack us in the face with, oh, well, it turns out the guy was just a terrible person in the first place, and that means that she should apply that judgment to everybody in the rest of the world and use that to change her entire life. It's like, what?
Yeah, that was actually something else I wrote down, is that usually I really like visual representation. I think it's really cool when it's done well, like, when you can see, like, subtle representations of, like, what's going on thematically with the characters. I think that's, I don't know, I enjoy that a lot. And when I make a short film, I try to include that in it as much as possible. But this was so on the nose. Like he represented, like, it's just, and another thing. So, when she had the book that Noah gave her, what was that book?
Sense and Sensibility?
Yes, yes. And she, I don't know, maybe this is just me kind of overthinking it, but she took the money that the Andy guy gave her and, like, put it together with, like, the book that Noah gave her. Kind of like, it kind of like, I saw in that, she's kind of, like, still holding on to those two, she's, like, holding on to those two things, and she's, like, kind of, like, not sure which one. I don't know. That was just a little representation.
You know, and it's funny, like, that would be a clever, subtle scene in literally any other movie. In this, it feels like they're trying to drive the point through your freaking skull, man. Like, you know?
Yes, that's the thing. There's no subtlety in any of it, yeah. So I think, do you have anything else to add on, Emma? Because I think we've just about...
To finish her off, let me just finish with this quote from the from a certain wiki about the purpose of cheesemakers. Give me 1 minute. give me 1 minute.
Okay.
And this is gonna basically sum up my entire opinion of her character in a nutshell. Legendary cheesemakers are known to players for their versatility. They are capable of skillfully baiting traps, exploring danger-filled caverns, digging open pipes, meat-shielding, bravely defending people from the hordes, and even making cheese. Humans even divined a positive correlation between possessing an enormous amount of cheese and enormous amount of friends, which is further proven by the fact that cheesemakers spend most of their days not working, but talking and socializing. Blessed are the cheesemakers. And I feel like that sums up my entire opinion of her character in a nutshell.
Wow. I've never heard it put that way before.
That wasn't very funny, was that? I thought it was funnier for some reason in my head. Yeah.
So why don't we move on to Noah, who I think We can both agree he was better than Emma was, right?
Which one was Noah? Was he the old man?
No, he was the blonde guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was pretty flat and drab, and there was really no reason for her to like him at all, other than he was a nice guy and he has muscles. And
you know what? What also grossed
that,
me out
that Kelly put in. Yeah.
Well, like, well, I realize that I'm interrupting you, so it's like, should I even? But it's too far in. I'm too far in deep. What disturbs me especially is that he's not even the generic, I'll go out and save the girl, and, like, I'll be such a hero, and I'll do it, man. I'll earn her love like that, right? You know? Instead...
That seemed to be more like Jacob.
Right. It's the most cliche thing, right? Where he goes out and saves the love. But you know what? Whatever. In this... He doesn't even do that. He doesn't even do the bare minimum of effort. Instead, he basically whines around, you know, I don't know. And then when she's actually in trouble, he basically gives up. And then when he gets his motivation on and he tries to run after her, he gets there. She's not there at the place where she was. And so what does he do?
No, Ty, you don't understand. That's the heartbreaking moment. That's the part where we cry with him. That's the part where, like, oh, it's so sad. He went back to find his true love, but she wasn't there.
That he just gave up and sat around moping in his own tears as he just laid there on the desk doing nothing.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's probably running around with some goats, right?
and his introduction is so late into the film. What was the purpose of having?
It wasn't that late.
Well, what confused me?
It was like at the third point. It was like at the first third.
What
about? It wasn't that?
What
bad.
What grosses me? What irritates me is that they have Jacob be introduced, then they have Noah be introduced. So it's like, you keep waiting for Noah to pop back up, because you assume those are the two main. No, Jacob was just there for no particular reason. He existed only for in that small reality, I guess.
Yeah, I think there could have been some engaging stuff if there would have been more of a connection there. And it would have made it more... quote unquote heartbreaking at the end when she like goes off with Andy, but I know that's really corny, but that was the point. I don't have much to work with, Ty, so go easy on me. He's a bit more unannoying in his personality than Emma, but
yeah, because he doesn't talk at all. He has no personality. That's why he has a better one.
Yep. Well, at least he's at zero. Emma's like in the negatives, right?
I don't know. I feel like Emma is worse, but at least they're trying with her. Like, you can say at least they're giving some kind of effort. With Noah, he has all the personality of the snowman outside my window, slowly melting in the Texas sun.
Oh man, nice. How's the storm out there? Actually,
it's gone. Right? It's all gone.
Okay,
power's back up though.
Okay, so. Good. Nice. So you want to move on to Kelly? She was the only character who I liked a little bit. I thought she was a pretty decent vessel to kind of show Emma the other side of what she's missing, other than Andy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a shame that it went absolutely nowhere, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was. I also like her introduction. I thought it was one of the times the film was trying to be kind of cute that I think it succeeded when there was the phone buzzing. And she was like, well, what is that?
What is that strange eldritch abomination?
Yeah, and then she just sees the phone right there. I don't know. I thought that was a cute little bit. And it was kind of invasive of Emma, too, to be looking at her phone. I know it was open, but she kind of, like, stared at it for an unusually long time.
Well, to be fair, she doesn't have the same social norms, I bet.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. I liked her a little bit. There wasn't much to her, but I think she was the best character out of any of them, but you have anything to say about Kelly?
Yeah, Bear, I would pretty much agree with that assessment. It's a shame
Yeah.
she's slightly more tolerable than everybody else in the show, but it's more because of the same reason that Noah is more tolerable, because she doesn't
Yeah,
really.
yep.
It is the most.
Okay, well,
Yeah. Okay.
why don't we move on to the big kahuna, Andy.
Oh yeah,
Andy.
what a dude.
So, I mean, the time, well, when he started playing with Woody and Buzz in the middle of the movie, I thought it was a little weird. It was kind of a cool callback, though.
And what disappoints me though is that I didn't know that his relationship, it's a really sad conclusion actually to the rest of the story. He gets separated from his family, then becomes just a total arse man. Woody would be so disappointed, you know that?
Yeah, he would. Well, yeah. So, he is very interesting because he gets introduced in the last, quarter of the movie, would you say? Last quarter?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that really frustrated me. It was like they were setting this guy up to fail because there was no t because he had no time to actually show off any of his
Yeah.
personality.
So with him, what do I say about him? Honestly, the only thing I can really think of for him is he had the corniest dialogue in the world. He was a pretty huge simp. And
My brother in arms.
yeah. And he was thrown in randomly, which is what I said before. And his conclusion is,
The
yeah,
way
I
he
don't
gets
know. I don't know. You
introduced
wanna.
is just the most, it is the most engineered, manufactured way. Like, I mean, we
Yeah.
bemoan, the constant, "Oh, you bump into me and like spill something on my shirt," and we go to the dry
Yes,
cleaner, and
yep.
like our entire romance starts from there.
Yeah,
Oh no, love finds you in charm is original, baby. Oh, it just goes a step above that, takes it all the way back around, So he falls in love with her. Well, I guess gets a crush on her, whatever it is, because he tastes her cheese. And at that moment, he knew, man. He knew she was the
Well,
one
don't
for
they
him.
say, isn't there like the saying, like the way to a man's heart is through his stomach or something like that?
Yeah, that's the saying. I guess I didn't think it would take the form of
Hallmark took it
cheese.
pretty literal.
I didn't think it would take the form of
Yeah.
cheese, though. Yeah, his conclusion. Oh, you want to go first? Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I can't think of much else to say about him.
His conclusion is just, it's so lame. And so, like, I guess this really does bring up the point. You say that you like symbolism, right? When the characters kind of
Yeah.
represent something. And so, this brings up an interesting question, because one of the things me and my dad talked about while we were watching this was that my dad argued that this was pretty well rep that he was pretty well representative of the average dude, based off of his own anecdotal experience. That generally
Yep.
speaking, most people will act like that. My counter argument was that if it messes up the story, A, if it messes up the story, it shouldn't even be in there, and this makes it a less satisfying story, and B, it doesn't need to be symbolic. Why can't it just be individual, right? Why can't it just be an individual guy with different values, but who's still a good guy and a decent romantic prospect, right? And so you say that you like
Yeah.
symbolism, so I ask you, do you think the problem is the symbolism, or do you think the problem is that they executed it badly? Do you think symbolism or just treating the people as individuals is better? Which one is better? You know what I mean? Too many questions?
So for Noah, I think the symbolism works fine because there's not much deviation from Amish person to Amish person, right?
Is there?
I mean, just the society that they live in kind of conforms them from birth, right?
So-so. I mean, like, that's realistic, but again, my argument is always, so what if it's realistic? I just want to watch a good movie.
Well, I think in this case, because the whole, like, her whole conflict, like, stems from her being Amish, I think it counts a pretty big deal. And I think it was good, I think it was good that they had Noah being that visual representation to see, like, what she was picking between the two. And, yeah, I see what you mean, whether accuracy or service to the story is better in symbolism. That's basically what you're saying, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the problem with a lot of symbolism is it's just really hard to get all the facets down, right? Like, to get all the angles of the story. So what ends up happening, if you go purely by statistics, then you get a super flat character who has to be perfectly in line with whatever is technically accurate, right?
Yeah, but then you fall into the trap of, like, if it's not exaggerated to a point, then what would he be then just besides Noah? Because Noah didn't have much character or personality either.
Well, true, but they could have fixed that had they just decided to ignore the symbolism.
I don't know in this case, because I agree with your dad that it's true. Whether or not it should be that way in the symbolism and set the story aside, I don't know. I don't know.
Definitely,
I guess it could work either way.
It's a tough question.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, when you do remove the symbolism, the disadvantage is, like, you remove some of that thematic essence, right? Like, the core, that core simple part conflict of your story, right? So, yeah. Just an interesting thought.
So, you want to move on to the plot?
Oh, gosh, what a complete...
Okay, so, oh, just so everyone knows, we're kind of separating the plot and the story. The story's going to be more of the, kind of what's going on with the characters, and we're treating the plot as just a series of events, just so everyone knows. And the thing I really didn't like about it was that it uses the older than dirt. You know, maybe out there, I'll find out who I really am, you know?
Well,
and it's, you know, really...
I mean, I'm fine with them using an ancient trope like that. I just wish that they executed it properly. I mean...
Yeah, and... But, I mean, does that trope really work, though? Because I don't think a change of,
Mulan,
like, scenario is going to
bring out...
Literally
90% of Disney movies.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, a good...
Oh, yeah, like Tangled.
Yeah,
And
there's a ton Little of Disney Mermaid, movies that operate off of that exact story plot where they're like, they want to go out and find themselves or whatever.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, just for me myself, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I kind of excuse it for those movies because those are like, because that's like complete fiction, you know, like those settings, but with this trying to be like a realistic movie, like take place today and... We just know that's not how it works, you know, like, seeing something in a fairy tale, which, like, a Disney movie is different than seeing real people in, like, our own setting do it, so. I don't know, it's just how I feel about that.
I mean, if you take that to the logical extreme, then, I don't know, it just, I don't see much of a difference with the setting. All it is just... background, pretty much. The core story elements are the same either way. But, so, I guess moving on then. So what? Something that I wanted to talk about. Something that immediately strikes me. The scene composition of this was just awful. I mean, so. Pretty much all of it is conversations. 90% of it.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. You know, Pride and Prejudice, The book mentioned in there is actually pretty much 90% conversations, and it's a pretty darn good book, right? So, yeah. I mean, like...
I've never read it, so I don't know.
I think most of us would prefer that they show it, but, you know... Well, actually, conversation is a form of showing, if you think about it. But, off topic. Right. So, okay, fine. Conversations. The problem is that all of these conversations are just completely irrelevant, and they're totally... They don't link up with each other at all. It is truly the most random, inane junk. You know, like they're talking about, you know, let's see here. Just off the top of my list, I'm heading to my cousin's farm. I'm helping my cousin on her farm. My cousin on her farm. What I have here marked down, what it reminds me of is Won by the Sword, which is a book that that is pretty much one of the only books I would burn rather than read. I would literally just throw it onto a fire. What it is literally just a battle. They talk about the battle, and then they go to the next battle, then they talk about the battle. And this strikes me as very much the same thing. They go to the fair. They talk about the fair. Mm-hmm. They talk about talking about the fair. They go, the Andy and the girl talk about going on the date. Mm-hmm. They talk during the date about talking about going on the date. They go.
And they go to the next date, and then they talk about the date that they're on, and they talk about their previous date, and about,
It is utterly inane, and and it doesn't sound like real people talking at all. Did you notice that?
It doesn't. Maybe that's just what Amish people talk like. I mean, who knows? I mean, Amish people don't even exist, right? what kind of person doesn't use technology? I mean, come on.
Britain isn't real, guys.
British people. It's 2021, right?
British people aren't real. Have you?
That's another true fact.
Have you ever met a British person? Have you gone to Britain? Doesn't exist. It's all a lie by big tech.
Yep. Facebook, we're coming for you. Okay. There's another problem I had. Kind of going off what you said, there's no real external conflict. And so, other than just like the fact that it's just talking the whole time, and you said like, oh, you know, Pride and Prejudice is good, even though it's just talking the whole time. When it comes to a visual form like movies, though, when there's nothing happening, it's super drab. Like, it's really boring. Like, I was going to say, like, the pacing is bad. I mean, which it is, but there's, like, nothing there to watch at all. It's just a couple of series of events. There's no conflict there. I mean, like, I guess you could say there's a little bit of conflict when Noah's, like, in the competition, but that's grasping at straws at best. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why it's super boring, because there's... And that's the thing. So, some pieces of media can go, like, super plot-heavy or super story-heavy. Like Indiana Jones, right? You don't like that a whole lot because it's really plot heavy, right? There's not much story there, right? I mean, you talked about that. I think, right?
No, I like the movie. It's just that I don't think it's as good. I don't think it's objectively as good as a lot of people make it out to be. I think that was
because of the lack of story.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But then you also get a movie like this, which is basically a story and nothing happens the whole time. So I think it's just a lesson that for any movie to be like really good, you gotta have a balance of the two, because one or the other, it can work if you have an extremely skilled director.
Yeah, I think that's
like Spielberg.
I think that's the main thing. What you just said there. If they had the skills to pull off the execution, then they could have gone for it. But they did not. They did not have the skills to pull off the execution. They had... Yeah,
the romance is also super forced in every scenario. All it is, it's just like... It's like, It's like attractive person, fall in love, another attractive person, throw them in the mix, fall in love. It's like there's literally nothing that the characters like about each other than, I don't know, being attractive to people. That's pretty much it.
And that ties back into the symbolism thing we were talking about, right? Like, you know, it feels like they're falling in love purely because sorry, I lost my thought. Lost my train of thought. Darn.
Mm. Yeah. But yep, that's not a super great. If there was at least something there for them to fall in love with other than a piece of cardboard, maybe it'd be a little better. But, you know, who knows? Again, the cheese hinging the whole plot is really dumb. And you have anything else to say about it? Oh, and I had one more thing though. So what could have like saved this movie, I think, not saved it, but made it better, was like, well, one of the biggest problems in it is that there's no like resolution to it. It's super anticlimactic because it goes into a tiny hill and then it just goes back down. Like there's no peak there and it just stays there the whole time. There's like no big, you know, finale where she makes her decision. It just kind of tapers off and then it ends in a fade away, and then it's like 3 years later, which is just super, just, it's like, yeah, oh man, like this is what I spent my time doing.
Well, one of my notes here is I was so frustrated over the fact that she spends ages talking about going out there and doing it and like nothing ever happens, as expected, right? They never introduce a new aspect of the conflict, and then at the end there's no meaningful theme where she thinks it over and she says, this is what I want to do because this is what I want to do, or anything like that. Just she makes this totally illogical, purely emotionally driven choice based off of a biased viewpoint that she got because she spent time with, like, it's so nasty, man.
You want to move on to the story then? Because I'm out of stuff to say in the plot.
Okay.
So how about you start this?
So the internal conflict, when you sum it up, it centers around her wanting to go with either her traditional Amish values and stay inside of her small little bubble. And I guess this is going to intersect with theme a bit. So she stay inside her small Amish bubble or go out and explore the world. And, you know, okay, fair enough. So rather than doing the logical conclusion, which would be a crazy road trip adventure where she goes around New York and all over the world, which sounds like a really epic story, let's be honest, huh? And you know how it would have ended. At the very end, she has the choice of going back to her old Amish roots or staying with either Noah or Andy.
Yeah.
And that's how this film could have gone. No. They spend, as we said before, just basically an hour 15 minutes doing nothing but talk about how she wants to do it, how she wants to go out and experience the world.
Yep.
She never does it. She goes back, and just the entire thing, we're basically stuck at the first act point. We're stuck. The entire movie is just the first act, the setup. Yeah. You know, it feels like it's all just a bunch of setup for when she finally goes out there and does something and figures out what she wants her life to do. But it never ends like that. They just skip over the entire second and third act and skip straight to the end. Yeah, okay.
I definitely see what you mean. That's a good point. If they like kind of like cut this down and put in some more elements of her actually doing it, that would have worked a lot better.
Now that we're saying it, that seems like that could have been such a cool movie. Like, just a wacky road trip adventure with this Amish girl as she goes around seeing the world and gets in, like, a huge amount of trouble with, like, the Italian mafia or something.
Yeah.
just a really wacky, awesome road trip adventure. Instead, we got this. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, that could have been a killer concept.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that sounds like such a killer concept.
So the only other things I have to say about this is basically what we said before is I don't like how everything's told to us. Would have been nice to have something shown, but this movie lacks subtlety on every level. So what are you gonna do? The only other thing I appreciate is how Kelly and Emma. This was a bit of representation that I felt the movie did well. Kelly and Emma were able to add to each other's lives in a purely positive way. You know, having her, if they had her be the representation of like what Emma wants, and then Emma also being able to like kind of like see the downfall of that. Like, I think maybe that Kelly's boyfriend thing and kind of seeing that spiral out of control would have been an like if they chose to go the same storyline, could have been a much better than just having like Andy, you know, whatever. It could have been a much better way to like show Emma the other side, the good parts and the bad parts.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just as you're talking about that, I was thinking of this movie that I watched 2 weeks ago called A Roman Holiday. Which is kind of similar to this. What it's basically about is this this princess escapes her castle and goes and hangs out with this reporter guy, and at the end,
really?
Yeah,
a reporter.
Yeah,
it's pretty similar.
And so they go run around, and she gets taken back to the castle, and so like the ending of it, right? She meets him one last time. Yeah. They look at each other, and then he walks away, and she heads back up to do her duty. And I feel like if they had done that thing there, where it would have brought in so much depth, you know? Like, no, like, Andy isn't a bad guy. She ends up choosing the Amish way of life, right? And at the very end, there's just a few seconds where they look at each other, then they walk off. Like, that could have been
their respective
that
paths.
Could have been super powerful, man.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this movie has no subtlety on any level, so.
What?
Do you think that we've covered everything?
I think we should talk
about theme.
We should talk more about the message of this film. So, summed up, the message of this film is truly revolutionary. So, When you sum it up, what you get is don't leave your home. Stay inside. Stay home. Don't give people the coronavirus. never leave your small circle. Don't explore the world. You should just live life, never expanding your horizons, never discovering.
You know, this is actually very. You know, there's this movie. You know, there's like this TV show or movie or something that I see sometimes. It's called CNN, and it has a very similar message.
You know, actually, side note here: New York Times just published an article saying that critical thinking is dangerous. So just let that sink in. Okay, off topic. Off topic. What I was going to say was that, and it feels so much more disingenuous, like, not the New York Times thing, we're not even going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. what feels really disingenuous about this film is, again, she doesn't make that decision because she's experienced both sides and she realized that either A, she has a duty to her family, or B, she just genuinely loves the Amish way of life. It's neither of those. She picks that because the alternative is worse. And it is so, it's so nasty. It's so awful. And it just really makes me
sick. Ty, wait, you're missing it. You're missing it because that's what real life is like.
Ah, I don't care. I don't care, man. It feels so... I could at least understand if it was something like she believes that this is something that she has to do. It's the right thing for her to do. I might disagree with that, but I can respect it. She chooses it because she was assaulted by a guy. It's just like...
The one thing that I have to say about it is that there's this one point, I don't know if I just talked about this before the podcast, but there's this one part where Noah says that what will make you happy isn't out there. And there is some truth in that statement. Like, what's going to make you happy is not going to be, like, something you find out there in the world. And I thought that that was one thing that the movie did establish that I did like about it. Yeah. But that's basically
what
would have
been great.
What would have been great is
rather than spitting it into our ears, they had just showed us that through their actions.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty cool. Revolutionary idea here, guys.
Yeah. That's the only thing I have to say about that. But I think we basically covered everything about the theme. So I kind of added a new section. I didn't tell Ty about it. I just call it the script / acting. And I'm just saying both are trash. The lines are horrible. The dialogue is horrible. The performances are lifeless. It's like...
Give us an
Andy's
analogy.
Andy's dialogue was the worst of all. His dialogue was, it was just complete simp from beginning to end for Emma, and I could not stand it. It was nearly intolerable. I nearly had to turn the movie off. It was that bad.
Can you give us a highlights reel of some of your favorite lines, just right off the bat here?
I can't think of anything right now. Yeah, so I think that's just about everything we mentioned before, how she kind of makes fun of the script unintentionally, which is kind of funny and pretty clever. maybe somebody actually did that. Maybe one of the script writers, like, I don't know, maybe they, like, tricked the director somehow. They're like, yeah, this is really good stuff. And like maybe like the director was writing it and they were like, hey, you should add this in. Or maybe like someone was over their shoulder saying, hey, add this line in. That'd be really good. And it's them just making fun of like what they're writing.
You know,
that would...
It reminds me of this anime I was watching where in the credits, it was such a it was a horrible show. And in the credits, somebody put in, honestly, we're kind of in a bit of a mess right now. that has the same that has the same kind of feeling to me as this, where it's just completely on the nose. You can tell that at some points they were completely self-aware. They just looked at this and said, what have we created?
What have I done?
Oh jeez.
Okay, well, we're on the music / visual section. Oh man, the music was like, it looks like they just, like, looked up copyright-free music on YouTube and then just, like, put it in the movie. That's probably what they did.
You know, I commented at one point, if they repeat that song one more time, I'm gonna blow a hole through the TV. Because I was so fed up with it. They repeated that one song over and over and over again. Oh, jeez.
It was bad, the whole thing. And cinematography was, you know, as bad and unoriginal as you would expect. Nothing crazy there. I have a couple of quick thoughts, actually. I thought it was kind of cool that they referenced the secret ingredient, and that made me think of our Kung Fu Panda review. Haven't checked it out. Link down below. It'll be on our It'll be on our page, so, you know, shameless plug right there.
Wink, wink, wink.
But another thing, I was, and before the, like, the halfway point of the movie, when I saw Kelly with a Mustang, my immediate thought was, how does somebody on the budget of a librarian afford a Mustang?
They blew, that's it, like, that's it right there. They blew the entire budget on that one scene with the Mustang.
They blew the whole budget on the Mustang. They must have, that's gotta explain it. That's
they picked up the script writers and the actors off of Fiverr. It's revealed. I knew it.
It was all the Mustang's fault.
Oh, gosh. What was the actual budget of this film? Now I'm curious. Okay,
what was it?
Let's see. According to IMDb... Hold on. Doesn't seem to... I can't find the information. Probably because they were embarrassed. let's see. Love finds you in charm. Budget. The power of Google. I order you. Oh, wow. I really can't find it anywhere. Oh, they must have been really embarrassed over this or something. Budget in the 200 range, you know? Built made this out of $5, recycled most of the sets from cardboard.
No, okay, plot twist. The whole cast is Amish, so they only have to spend like $5.
No.
That's why the acting and dialogue is so bad.
Oh no. Okay, so.
Okay, so, if that's it, you want to give your final opinion and summary?
All right, so, cue pomp and circumstance. This movie changed my life. Before, I was... not even gonna go there. Okay, this film was pretty bad. I felt like gouging out my eyeballs at the end. Let's see here. Hated it. 1 out of... not quite 1 out of 10. 3 out of 10. 3 out of 10. I think it's a solid 3 out of 10 for me.
This movie was, it was flawed in just about every way, most egregiously with the external plot, themes, story, scripts, and characters. Therefore, I have no choice but to also give it a 3 out of 10. And I'm not copying you, that's actually what I put down when I saw it.
Not quite, bottom of the bargain bin, complete D-movie trash. Not even near there, but it's definitely no 5 out of 10. Definitely no 4 out of 10. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. So I guess together, the narrative calculus gives Love Finds You in Charm a 3 out of 10. If you enjoyed this episode of Narrative Calculus, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to leave a 5-star review down below and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Also, be sure to check out some of our other episodes, as well as our YouTube channel. Guys, it's happened. Narrative Calculus is on YouTube.
The dream.
Let's give us
the dream
hand.
Has come true.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. We're going to be... right now, we're just going to be putting a couple of clips from the regular episodes in there, but we might start getting into some exclusive content on YouTube. So if you don't want to miss out on that, be sure to get on there. You're not going to want to miss what we have in store. We got some pretty good stuff.
You know, the three
and
people, the
it,
three
so...
people who decided to watch to the end to listen to this
message.
Don't
even say it. Okay, whatever. Don't listen. And we'll see you guys on the next one. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Have fun with the cheese.